sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone 500
greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Few false starts here. This is actually our second time trying to record this episode. We're back, though, this week with album number 106, which is Live Through This by Hole.
And the sky was made of amethyst, and all the stars are just like little fish.
And not, as I read it initially, Live Through This.
Or Through This, an album by Live.
but Ben, I think I mentioned to you another time that it bugged me because we grew up in Canada with the legendary Canadian band Tragically Hip, and
that's right.
In the late 90s, they released a live album, which I think was their first live album, which contained so many of their hits, so we were all for it, and it was called Live Between Us.
Yes.
Not Live Between Us, Live Between Us. But it's because, and the photo of the album was graffiti that was in their hometown that was put there by their an early member of their band who left the band or was kicked out of the band or something, and he graffitied the wall in an alley that said The Hip, Live Between Us. And then they took a picture of that, and that was the title of their live album, Live Between Us. So I think that is messing with my brain when I read this, but it is in fact Live Through This by Hole. You want to just do some details, Ben? We'll get right into this.
I think that's a good way to start. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that. Give some context for this album. So Live Through This released April 12th, 1994. And this was Hole's second studio album. All tracks were written by band leader, front person Courtney Love and Eric Erlandson, who's the lead guitarist, except for a couple tracks that were co-written, or Doll Parts was only written by Love, and Credit in the Straight Road was written by another guy.
Okay.
And there's another one where they had another co-writer, but most of them are written by that duo. I'll comment a little bit about the writing later because there's some other notes on that. Charted number 13 in the UK, number 52 in the US, and number 29 in Canada. The album debuted on the US Billboard 200 at number 55, eventually peaking at number 52 in January 1995, so about 9 months after it came out, during its 68-week stay. 68 weeks on the charts, not bad.
Wow.
In December 1994, the record went gold, having sold a total of 500,000 copies, and went platinum 6 months later for having sold 1 million copies. As of 2010, the album had sold more than 1.6 million copies in the United States. So in 26 years, it sold 1.6 million copies, but it did a million of that in the first... in the first like year, which is really interesting. Like everybody was into it, and then no one was into it. Not no one, but you get the point.
Yeah.
And well over 2 million copies worldwide. Is it also achieved platinum status in Canada and Australia? Now, Canada platinum is only what, 100,000? Is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. 100,000. Whereas in the States, platinum is a million. Makes sense. There's 10 times more people down there. Down because I live in Canada, and it's south. Doesn't mean anything else.
Right.
A couple notes here, and this is pretty significant. So, I guess I want to make some general comments about Hole because it's often considered that Courtney Love and her persona and her depiction in the media and her different issues that gain notoriety always overshadowed the band and always kind of took center stage over Hole as a band. That is an opinion that's shared, an opinion nonetheless. So the band is doing great things, and Courtney Love is co-writing with Eric Erlandson, but really the media, the attention is always on her, and of course her very famous husband, Kurt Cobain, lead singer of Nirvana. And she is also, I think, I'm taking some liberty in saying this, trying to prove herself as a musician and not just the rock and roll girlfriend of
That's right.
a very famous rock and roller, right? So I think there's some of that too. I'm speaking for her, but I think that's true. Now, Kurt Cobain died 1 week before this album came out. And there have been rumors when the album came out and all the way to today, although the band and Courtney Love and others have refuted this, is that Kurt Cobain was a ghostwriter for the album, that he was involved in writing it, and it wasn't credited for it. Courtney Love, Eric Erlandson, and lots of other people have said no, that didn't happen. He was involved. He was in the studio a few times, did some backing vocals for a couple songs. I think he's even credited for doing that. But they've said no, he wasn't a ghostwriter for the album. But that still has persisted as a rumor. And of course, since he passed away a week before the album came out, he can't really confirm or deny that.
Right.
we'll go back just a little bit. This is their second studio album. They released their first album, Pretty on the Inside, in 91, so 3 years earlier. Despite moderate sales, the album was a critical success among English and American press. And then in March 1992, following the album tour, the drummer and the bassist, for the original drummer and bassist, they left due to artistic differences. So in 93, the band recruited former Janitor Joe bassist Kristen Pfaff, P-F-A-F-F, an accomplished cellist and classically trained musician who brought a new level of professionalism to the group. So we're, without even talking about the music yet, we're seeing how this album is taking a different direction from the first album. And that is something that you'll see in reviews, the critics say constantly about this album, that it was very different than the first album and going in a much different direction. Unfortunately, this was the only whole album to feature bassist Kristen Pfaff, and the final album to be released during her lifetime, as she died 2 months after the album came out. I believe a drug overdose. I didn't write that down. I read that, but I believe that's why. It doesn't matter. It was tragic. And so we see that this album is fraught with tragedy. there's a lot of tragedy surrounding this album. And obviously, none of that was intentional, because it had been written before these things had happened. These two people passed away. But you see some themes that I think pair with that tragedy on this album. Live Through This marked a departure from the band's noise rock roots towards a more radio-friendly rock format. We hear that in this album, Ben, more melodic attempts, both instrumentally and lyrically, or vocally, rather. And finally, just one more note here. The lyrics and packaging reflect Love's thematic preoccupations with themes of beauty, motifs of milk, motherhood, anti-elitism, and violence against women, while Love derived the album title from a quote in Gone with the Wind. I assume either the book or the movie or both. So that's just an interesting juxtaposition of this kind of punky, angry, grungy music, but also these very relevant, and I would say still very relevant, themes, and then pairing it with, you know, a very classic piece of art. So you get a lot. I find this album is full, for me, full of juxtapositions, full of dichotomies.
Yeah.
Things that are contradictory or opposed or opposite of each other, but work together in concert on this album. And that is something I appreciate very much about it. That's a lot of info. I'm sure there's lots more info you can look into. We don't do the whole nine yards on all of these. Ben, any other comments about the background or historical notes before we move on to the album cover artwork?
Just to say, you know, pressing play on this had some almost in a flashback kind of way. I'd never spent any time really with Hole, although I discovered that there were a few of the radio hits that I did know. But this one really transports the listener back to that early 90s grunge Nirvana era. Just the way that it sounds and the way that it's trying to express something that's different than the way punk does. But man, you can almost feel the like ripped jeans and flannel shirts when you press play on this one in a pretty intense way. And I like what you said about the dichotomies too. I think we'll get into that a little bit, including our conversation here in just a second about the album cover too. So why don't we transition to that?
So the album cover, I'll describe it very briefly. I'll read a little bit about it as well, but it is, there's a woman on the front. She's got a crown on, bouquet. So this looks like a beauty pageant. She takes up most of the image. This is the whole image, no border or anything. The background is kind of a purpley velvet curtain, you know, mm-hmm. as if she's on a stage. And then there's a kind of icon in an oval, or it's an icon, the logo rather. Hole is like a logo. Right. I'll read about that a bit.
Almost and has like a surf live, rock live. Look, that oval logo.
Yeah, a little bit. Yep. Yep. And I want to read this. This is a description of it, but I think it helps. Fashion model Leilani Bishop is shown on the cover of the album, shot by photographer Ellen Von Unworth, dressed in beauty pageant attire with a tiara and a bouquet of flowers, with mascara running down her eyes in tears of joy. Courtney Love stated in an interview that she, quote, wanted to capture the look on a woman's face as she's being crowned. This sort of ecstatic blue eyeliner running kind of, I am, I won, I have hemorrhoid cream under my eyes and adhesive tape on my butt, and I had to scratch and claw and bleep my way up, but I won Miss Congeniality, end quote.
Yeah.
The band logo introduced on the front cover of the album, we talked about it, the top right corner, shares stylistic similarity to the contemporary Mattel Barbie logo. So the other thing that I pieced together, I don't know if this is intentional, the opening track and one of the, I didn't talk about the singles, but it was one of the singles, is Violet. And we see in the curtain and the logo is a light purple or violet. Mm. So that's kind of interesting as well. It's kind of, do you remember this cover, Ben, from growing up?
Is it one familiar? It's funny. The quick glance with the violet color and the beauty queen. If you don't look a little closer at the running makeup and the tension in the image, I imagine you might assume this was a different kind of album. I think this is the same era as the Spice Girls, right? Where like glamour and femininity is on display in a pretty significant way. It'd be really funny to think about the unfortunate folks who picked this album up expecting it to be a slice of sort of girl power pop and discovered it was much more angsty and much more conflicted and angry. But I love that contrast, and I think it fits well with what you've already said here, that you can see some pain in the midst of the sort of glossy attempt to sell. You can see some pain there, and I think the album, if what's true about their transition to try and be more radio friendly is really trying to do that as well. You know, let's polish this a little bit more, make it a bit more radio friendly, and this album could be misconstrued, but actually I think upon further inspection it's pretty spot on for what we have to listen to here tonight.
Trying to think back to the 90s and being a teen, I remember Celebrity Skin, which was the album that came after this. I remember some of the songs. I remember the album cover. That's more what I remember, because I would think I was more into music then. This came out in 94. Okay. I will say, and as we're kind of moving the music here, as I looked at the track list before we started, before I started listening to it, I was like, yeah, I don't know any of this. I know Celebrity Skin, I know that, but I don't know this. But as I pressed play, like, I knew the opening track, Violet, right away. Miss World, there was another one that I can't remember which one.
Doll Parts, I think
Doll Parts, yeah, because I think that's another single that I was like, oh yeah, I remember this for sure. So it was obviously in the zeitgeist of what I was listening to on the radio. I remember going to a friend's place and it being on Much Music or the radio or something. Which would have been 94-95. So it was there and I remember it, but never really got into this band. Like, never had the albums, never listened to them.
And in 94 we were 12, so maybe this kind of angst and overdramatic attitude wasn't necessarily something we were quite yet into.
Yeah, I always have a hard time with how
years later.
Yeah, I always have a hard time with how old I was in any year. The math, I always have to take one away because I was 12 for 2 weeks of 1994.
Oh, yeah, true.
Because I have a very late birthday. At 11, 12 years old, you're not really, well, I don't know about now. Maybe more so now because you have access to everything. When you're that age, back in our day, and certainly any time before, if you don't have the means or someone who's willing to buy the music for you, you don't have it. You have to own it.
Right,
you have to have a physical copy. Now you don't. The history of this planet's entire music is in the palm of your hand. So anything you want to listen to is there, for the most part. So I think kids are able to access more music younger and therefore create their tastes maybe a little younger, but also beyond the cusp, the cutting edge, if they choose to, or if they're that's interested, they can follow what's happening and what's being released. And this is coming out tomorrow and be in on that, whereas we really were not at that age.
Yep.
Is that a fair judgment?
I think so. I mean, fair, whatever's fair is relative. I'm embarrassed to think about how I probably perceived Hole. I mentioned when we talked about Alanis Morissette that I had a pretty strong bias as a teenage boy against female artists, and I probably would have dismissed Courtney Love and Hole as something not worth my time. Rather than hearing the angst or the power in her storytelling voice and appreciating it, I would have just dismissed it for a very patriarchal kind of unfortunate attitude.
Yeah. I remember talking about that with you, with Alanis Morissette, and I don't want to rehash all that, but we struggled with where did that come from, and why were we like that, and even there's still a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to some of it now, but I think for the most part I'm able to listen to music and ingest art much more unbiased, I hope, than I used to. But I think that for me, I kind of like some of the edgy stuff. Like, I never really went out and bought it, but like this, what was the other band? Baruch Assault. You guys made fun of me. I once bought a Biff Naked album. But that's the thing too. And I'm not being critical, but like, I remember that I bought it, and everyone was like, why? What are you getting that for? And it didn't matter. Like, well, I think the music's kind of cool. Like, no, and I'm not, I'm making up conversations, yeah. right? But I remember no,
I for sure.
I'm not upset by it, but I do remember like that was a real thing, and I think, I certainly wasn't getting kind of the poppier, like I wasn't into sort of the pop female art, but the mm-hmm. the music that I liked, I think. I was able to break free from that a little earlier and going, if I liked it, I liked it. It didn't matter. You know, which is good. But, yeah, this, I liked this kind of stuff, but just not enough to ever, spend my money on it at the time.
Right.
I will say this, and we'll talk about this moving to the music. I will say that I listened to this a few times in preparation, but, after listening to the whole album through, or even most of it, I felt I didn't feel good. Like, this music doesn't make me feel good. And I'm not saying that all music is supposed to make you feel good. That's not what I'm saying. Or that music is not good music if you don't feel good after. Because there's different purposes for all different music. And it's not all supposed to make you feel good. Necessarily. However, for just what I want to listen to right now, that's not what I want. And this, you know, yeah. I feel that anger, the angst, which is, I'm glad she's writing about it. She's frustrated, she's speaking to different issues here, very prominent.
Maybe even the 12-year-old boy that wouldn't listen to her.
maybe, right? And, you know, it's just not, it's not what I want to ingest musically right now.
Yeah.
So that was a challenge because even I was going to listen to it one more time today and I started it up and I was like, nah, I don't really want this right now. And that is not a reflection on the music. That's just a reflection of like, I'm a middle-aged man now. I guess I don't always want this, this type of thing, but it's,
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll talk more about, you know, what the music is to me, but what about you? Did you have a similar feeling when listening to it, or did you really, really like it? Like, what? How did you feel listening to this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mentioned at the beginning that we made one effort to record this review and couldn't get the sound files to download properly and had to re-record. So this is our second time through this conversation. A week later, and it's hard to go back to. I was ready to be done with this music, not because it did two things. I mentioned earlier that it felt very familiar, like being transported back to that 90s grunge era.
Huh.
But the pain, maybe, or the emotion in this songwriting, sometimes the visceral anger that you can hear, I didn't want to dwell there. And maybe it is a sign of middle-aged fatherhood or the fact that I listen to James Taylor and Jackson Browne and Cat Stevens far more than I do angry rocker music these days. But I was ready to be done and kind of like a little bit sad to have to revisit it so soon to hop on again and have this conversation. So yeah, I resonate a lot with what you're saying there. It feels to like it kind of contradicts the I should have given this more time when I was younger sentiment but maybe also just not where I am these days, like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference too when you're able to appreciate something. I think you and I have both shown that we appreciate this. And we've talked about this in many other albums where we're going, I recognize, I appreciate what a great work of art this is. I recognize why so many other people like it. It's not my thing. And that's the same way here. And I think again, in different circumstances, maybe 14-year-old or maybe 16 or 18-year-old me would have liked this a lot more. And would have been into this a lot more because I was into a lot of music like this and I liked that kind of, you know, aggressive, get it all out kind of thing. But now, even though that's not, I'm in the James Taylor, Jim Croce, Gordon Lightfoot, Joni Mitchell camp that you're in now. And that's kind of, those are the things that really feed my soul right now, like in terms of just reflection or just listening to music quietly or those are the things that I crave, you know, the Beatles and other things. That's what I want right now. But I still appreciate this, and I think there's a lot of people who really need this type of expression, and it's so important. Especially, you know, there are so many, it feels like there are much more young women in music now doing very well and paving the way for more and more young women. So I really have to give credit to not just Courtney Love, but the other women in Hole for, you know, really paving the way.
Absolutely.
In a tough time. And there were many women before them who did the same for them. We talked a bit, I think we've talked in Nirvana about a band called Bikini Kill, which is another kind of punk grunge band, I think in the late 80s. And I know they influenced this band. I believe that, was it Courtney Love or Kurt Cobain, did he date somebody from Bikini Kill?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
But I think it was somebody, they were on a date or they're doing something, and that's where It Smells Like Teen Spirit came from, because one of the girls was wearing, and that was the brand of a deodorant. I think that's the story. Anyways, I think that Bikini Kill has something to do with that. Or one of Courtney Love's friends was in, I don't know. I'm butchering that story, but I know that I know it influenced them for sure.
Yeah. This is a bit of a similarly maybe disjointed tangent, but I finished Carrie Brownstein's biography a few months ago, and she is of Portlandia fame, at least was to me, but those in the indie rock world know that she was part of Sleater-Kinney, and she talked a lot about Bikini Kill and how much of an influence it was, especially in the Pacific Northwest, to people like her who are starting out and trying to find their voice. And it all kind of comes together the more we study the history of music, the history of American rock, the history of all these different genres that kind of branch out of it. It is fascinating to see the way that they're all related in some way, build off each other.
Absolutely. So I'm appreciative of this music. There certainly are aspects of it that I really like, that I enjoy, but it's just not what I want right now. And I'm thankful that they created this music, to kind of pave the way for women in music specifically. My kind of overarching thought was something like this. It's a unique contrast of angsty punk yell singing and beautiful melodies weaved between edgy guitar riffs and soft rhythmic sections. So, like I said at the beginning of this, there's these dichotomies here, contrasting sounds and styles and musical techniques and approaches. And that I found very interesting and compelling. And I like that, where you get some really just some screamy yell songs and then some softer, really quite pretty songs. So I think it showed really a maturing and growth and advancement in Courtney Love and her songwriting partners' ability to write good songs and to improve in that and to do much better than they'd done before. And a lot of the kind of reviews and sort of the reception of this was that the critics really felt that this was Courtney Love being able to say, especially if the rumors weren't true about Kurt Cobain being a ghostwriter, for her to be able to say, like, I am a songwriter and a star in my own life. I'm not just the wife of the biggest, you know, new star in rock and roll, which he was at the time. So, you know, that it's for so many more reasons other than this, it's so sad that he passed away because it would have been really beautiful to see them be a couple that could both make incredible music independently of each other, that it wasn't her having to kind of ride on his coattails, that she was a brilliant musician and creator in her own right, right? Which she is and was, but you know, there's always going to be that comparison, unfortunately.
Yeah, whether she brought this on herself or not, I don't know. Maybe this is another sign of the downside of patriarchy, but she was also kind of classified as a head case, drama queen, you know,
yeah.
things like that. And I think that does something to her. Her reputation kind of colors the way that we view her in hindsight as well.
Even absolutely. At the moment, and yeah. And let's be clear. She did have a lot of drama and attracted a lot of drama and did have issues. Like, we're not saying that that's not true.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that, and even now our talk has really revolved around her and not around the band. Right. Which, I mean, you get that with, you know, even with other bands where it's like, it's a band, but there's really one person who's doing a lot of the heavy lifting. What's the other band? My Bloody Valentine, where the lead guitarist like wrote all the stuff and even played the bass in the recording, and the bassist, she was like, yeah, that's fine. I think we have a knee-jerk reaction to say, because in other bands we think about Pink Floyd or other bands where even the Beatles where the other members like get very defensive, Van Halen, you know, because another artist says, you know, no, I want it done like this, and they do it.
Yeah, right.
Whereas it's not always an issue. That's the point I'm making, that, you know, it's not necessarily an issue that one artist kind of does the heavy lifting.
Sure.
Anyways, I feel like I've been talking a lot, and I feel like we're getting through a lot of the music. Ben, what else? Is there anything else you want to add here about the music or the songs or anything? I guess we need to pick our favorite songs.
Yeah.
Do you want to jump to that?
I don't know what else to add. I'm feeling some relief, I guess, that we're ready to move on from this one, but also some I don't know, maybe some soul searching, that I need to maybe spend some time thinking about what it is about this moment in time that makes me fatigued from this kind of music. And wonder what that's about, I guess. I'm curious to see here what we decide with these favorite tracks, because it's an album we have mixed feelings about.
Yeah. So do you have one teed up, or do you want me to go first?
Go for it.
Oh, man, I'm struggling between two. So I'll tell you my two, and then if one of them is yours, then I'll just pick the other one. But if it's not yours, then I have to pick one. So it's the first two tracks, Violet, which is, I think, the one I remember the most, and Miss World, which is the second track. And I really like that one because she's very deliberate in her vocal delivery. It's kind of like this, the notes kind of, they bend and kind of trail off.
Yeah.
But it's intentional. Like, it's not just that she can't sing. She can sing well. And it's such an interest. And also, you know, we've talked about how much there's so much chorus effect on this album.
Yeah, I think we spent a bit more time on that when we had our conversation originally. But yeah, that theme of flipping the switch from chorus guitar to the overdrive. So such a symbol of this moment in time, but they really make heavy use of it on this album.
Yes, but I mean, we've also discussed, you know, I remember a time in the 2000s, you know, playing around with guitar and turning on chorus and going, oh, that's so cheesy, it's so overdone. And then more recently, listening back to stuff in the 90s, going, man, it was everywhere.
Yeah,
like,
was.
No wonder I thought it was overdone. Because it was very popular and very... That's what people were using. You listen to, like, so many songs, but, you know, Soundgarden, Black Hole Sun, which is just, like, just tons of it in the chorus, and so much Nirvana. You know, the chorus was such a popular effect, but it was really common, and, and obviously people liked it, or they wouldn't have kept selling records.
That's
so, yeah, lots of chorus. Anyways, yeah. Were you going to pick one of those, or do you have something else?
You're going to go with Miss World.
One of those first two. I'll go Miss World. I'll pick Miss World then. I'll pick Miss World.
Sounds good.
Does that mean you're picking Violet?
No, I think I'm going to go with Softer Softest. Because I think it has this exactly what we're talking about, of the flip switch from starting out with the slower chorus guitar, and then when they really want to push the point across, punch that distortion pedal. And
man, you know, if you've ever played electric guitar and had a foot switch, it does feel good. It does feel good to play, you know, and stomp that switch, and the other channel is, like, turned up a lot more, and the rest of the band jumps in. Yeah, it feels real good. Okay, so Miss World and Softer Softer. So no Violet. Although the honorable mention.
Sure. Maybe the song that most people know from this album anyway. So we'll let
I think
that.
Probably.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, so I think that's a good segue as we talk about what has aged well and what hasn't. Chorus effect?
Yeah, and I think maybe grunge in general. I think I pushed back on you and Rob when we were talking about
Nevermind.
Nirvana's Nevermind. Yep. That it in our minds as people who grew up then, it ages well because we remember, you know, headbanging along to the music and jumping around. But I wonder if it just to people who were not of that era, if it really does feel dated and aged. I'm starting to, maybe this is middle age hitting me now, I'm starting to feel more and more like it is a sound unique to that time and not something that people are really trying to embody these days. And so I actually don't think it is aged too well. Not that it's not valuable or interesting or something to consider how it fits in the longer line of rock history, but
I think what has aged well is the attitude, the feeling, the kind of brave ability to tackle difficult issues with such confidence and forcefulness. I think a lot of the sounds, the vocal delivery, I think, and again, people are still critical of women in music. I think still a little more than men, unfortunately. So especially with the advancement of singing shows like American Idol and The Voice and The X Factor, we are critical. You know, gone are the days where you could have a Bob Dylan or even a Patti Smith or a Courtney Love who could sing in a different way. Now we want that, you know, very polished, poppy, powerful vocalist. We want the Adeles, the Kelly Clarksons, the Lizzos, the Taylor Swifts, and so many more who just have this incredible vocal ability. and not necessarily this sort of homegrown. And don't get me wrong, Courtney Love, you definitely hear her vocal quality on this album, and it perhaps with some technological help, it even gets more polished as we get into subsequent albums. Certainly their next one, Celebrity Skin. So I think that hasn't aged well, only because we don't really, but we never really listened to, there wasn't a lot of music that did that anyway. So it was kind of an anomaly that this was successful.
Yep.
Because sort of one of a kind. Yes, the chorus effect and some of that, but I think, you know, that distortion, that kind of punchy stuff is still good. So I think the idea and the lyrics and the personality of the music has aged better than the music itself. Is that kind of a hot take, but I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is album number 106, 106 best album, ever. If you had told me, you know, in the mid 90s that this was going to be the case, I don't think I would have been on board at all. what do you think about it now?
It's fascinating to me that, you know, we're more than 100 albums deep here. And, this is just the second grunge album to show up on the list.
That's a good point.
This list does a much better job of being inclusive to female artists, and I'm glad Hole is one of the two bands here. But it's sort of interesting. It makes me wonder if we had a real true Hole fan, if they would be able to articulate why, historically speaking, this album is so important, like who it influenced and how it influenced and how it got women interested in music, because I think that those would all be reasons to hold it here in this place. I don't love this album. So from a personal standpoint, I would be fine with it falling down, but I hesitate to quickly say that, cause I wonder if there's something here that I just don't know about. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does a lot. And yeah, we haven't talked about that much, but that's true. Like, it was so many new additions to this list and so much more hip hop, but the grunge, there really isn't. Like, there's Nirvana. I would maybe put My Bloody Valentine in that category. We've talked about that, one of their albums, but we haven't done anything yet from Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, Soundgarden, Smashing Pumpkins, you know, all the great grunge albums from the early 90s. Like, we haven't done any of that yet. And I think that at least some of those are on.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Yeah. And to have this, I think, is saying something, to have this ahead of some of those other very successful bands and albums that I just mentioned. So, I think I've mentioned or will mention at some point, I may as well say it now, that the further away from number one we get, I feel like the less invested I am in in the ranking.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I used to be like, oh, you know, I'd have it five higher or five lower. Now I'm like, you know, I think it should be on the list, but I don't really care where it is. You know, like, it's almost like, but I do, I don't know. I don't think I'd put this much higher if given the choice. I think it is an important album. I think it's a good album.
Yeah.
But I, even if it was bumped 100 lower, like if it was, you know, 206, that would be okay with me. Again, yeah. Not to say that it's bad.
Right, right.
But I just don't. I think there's some other albums that I maybe would have wanted to hear first before this. But it's fine. I'm not upset about it.
No biggie.
No, no, we talked about Biggie already. Okay, so this is another thing that I think is happening more now than it did the first 100 albums that we talked about is, are there any other art, are there albums from this artist on the top 500? And I think more, we're saying more no, as yeah. we get further, further away from number one. So no, this is the only, they released, I think, total 4 or 5 albums in their career, and this is the only one. So that's it for our discussions about Hole, unless we talk about it in another album.
Yep.
Any final comments, Ben, before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. Yeah, it's been a nice nostalgic journey to go back in time to this moment in time that we remember, rather than some of these albums from the 70s and 60s that we just don't. to enjoy it in that kind of way has been fun. But unfortunately, maybe embarrassingly, I'm ready to be done and move on.
Yeah.
And especially that's okay. Second time through.
Yeah. So tell us what we have coming up next episode.
Yeah, we're excited to be tackling an album that I think neither of us have any familiarity with. We're shifting to number 107 on the Rolling Stone top 500 album list. That'll be Marquee Moon by Television.
Until that time, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you continue to take care of yourselves and those close to you, those important to you. And of course, we hope you'll join us again right here on the SoundLogic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.